If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy, wearegolding.com, for all your accountancy needs. Hi, how are you? I am good. I'm very excited because this week is the amazing Mr. Zed Bias. For any of you who know a bit of garage, he's the master behind one of the biggest garage tunes ever, actually. Neighbourhood. I feel good, good, good. That one. I ran into Zed. I've not seen him for years, but we were at 51st State Festival in the summer, which is amazing if you love a bit of garage. And I said to him, you've got to come on the podcast. There's so many people that I keep thinking, I've got to get them on the podcast, and then I don't get around to asking them. But Zed is Dave. Mate Dave, he's such a lovely, lovely guy, and he's turned his life around over the past few years, which he speaks about in the podcast. We talk about obviously music, mental health and fitness, because Dave was on the larger side. He wasn't happy. He wasn't treating himself properly, and he started exercising, and it's been so inspiring watching his journey online, because he's smashing it, and the change in his mental health has been amazing as well, which he speaks about anyway. But yes, so here is Zed Bias.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Work. It's honestly, it's not Rob's.
He is
headphones.
A producer. Are you seriously?
Yeah.
It's like, it was Bluetooth problems, mate.
Bluetooth problems. What is Rob's title?
So Robert McGrath of what house is it you're in?
Swan Road. Where? What, at home?
Targaryens.
Gryffindor.
Or?
Irish
Gryffindor,
man.
Yeah.
Gryffindor.
Yeah, so Rob, where are you from again?
Where am I from? West Drayton. West London.
West Drayton.
He's from West Drayton, yeah.
Where yeah. are you from originally?
Originally, New Addington and then Croydon, Purley. It's the very, very south.
Yeah.
Croydon, and you know, around Croydon. But then we got out when I was very young.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was probably 3 when we left.
And where did you go when you were 3?
My dad and my mum and me and my sister, we moved to St. Neots, which is in Cambridgeshire, which is about 11 miles from where they have We Out Here Festival. Very close Huntingdon and Cambridge, that sort of way. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because my dad's a brickie.
Yeah.
And he basically can work anywhere, innit? So,
yeah.
Money's quite good for, I suppose there was a lot of work at the time. Outside of London, so he decided to move us out. But I heard later on that it was because I started swearing. I was going to like a preschool, and I was coming out with all kinds of profanities. So my mum wanted to move us.
Really?
So we got a house. Yeah, we got a house exchange. You know, a council exchange
yeah,
a flat
yeah,
in
yeah. Oh,
New Addington. You could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that where you grew up then? Did you stay there for a long time?
Well, until I was about 10. My mum died when I was 10. Unfortunately she passed away. We kind of moved quite regularly between then and like 15. And then that's when I sort of started my GCSEs in a place called Brackley in Oxfordshire.
Okay, yeah.
And that's sort of where my main memories sort of start, really. All the mischief started, getting into girls and, you know, started to smoke behind the swimming, the old swimming pool in the school. I remember it very well. Me and a guy called...
Go on.
I was just going to say, me and a guy called Matt Titchener, we used to go smoke roll-ups behind the swimming block at our school.
Been smoking for a long time?
Oh, very long time, yeah. Way too long. I mean, 36 years I've been smoking.
Why haven't you given up yet? Have you tried to give up, or do you not care?
No, I've tried. I've tried, and there's been times I smoke less, but what are you going to do, you know?
Are you still running?
I hurt my ankles, Amy. Like, literally, I've sprained both of my ankles. The first time in Bangkok a few weeks ago, I sprained my right. I kind of, you know, rolled it, you know, when it goes inwards. And that was a bad one. That came up like an elephant's trunk, you know. It was awful. So that's kind of healing a little bit. And then the other day I stepped off a curb and I still had my readers on. And, you know, like the perception of like distance and depth and like all of that.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought I was stepping onto firm ground and I was stepping onto fresh air. And I kind of done the other one.
Yeah.
But it's all right, you know, hobbling around. I'm still getting to the gym. Me mate Rob took me up to the gym yesterday, didn't he, mate?
We put in a session.
We put in a session as well. It's not just all about the swim and the sauna, which was all right, to be fair. But it's nice taking up exercise sort of. And that, you know, in your 40s, is quite a revelation.
Yeah.
Do you find?
Yeah, definitely. I'm gutted that I didn't start earlier.
Same.
Because I just think my life would have been so much better.
Yeah.
Mentally, my head would have been in such a better space had I actually started doing more. You know Lawrence Bagnall, don't you?
funny. We was just talking about him. I was talking to some guys that I'm working with that he manages, the Versus guys. So it's kind of a very full circle. Me and Bags are well due a catch up. He's one of the first people that got on the phone to me, probably around 99, to see if I would DJ one of his events. And at the time, I didn't DJ. So I think I might have done it, or I might have turned him down the first time, but I think I eventually did play for him. I can't remember where exactly. It's a long time ago. But I can remember a conversation where he's kind of like edging me into the mental space of, actually, Zed, you could be a DJ. You know, your name would look all right on a flyer, mate, you know. But, I think I did a remix for his label as well back in the day. So, yes, Bags, I know him. I feel like I know him, even though we're not spoken in donkey's years.
Well, he said to me a long time ago that I should start exercising.
Really? Nice.
For my mental health way. I don't know what would have happened. I think it was when, because I used to do the door for him at the drum and bass Breaking Science nights many years ago. Oh, actually, sorry, come here. Do you know, I've got my youngest daughter's off school today. She always has to come and say hello. She's not well. Yes, I think that I was down and he said you should start exercising. And I was a bit like, but it's hard when you're not feeling that great. It's hard to then start exercising. Do you know what I mean? Like it takes a lot out. You have to be in the right headspace to do it.
But yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a catch-22, isn't it?
I think the same thing that can put you off, or the same thing that puts you off exercise, can be the catalyst that gives you no choice in the end. You know, the state that you get yourself into mentally. I left my place, like myself, with no other place to go. I had to improve my health. I was a walking time bomb, ticking time bomb. 20-odd stone.
Were you told that you had to?
I was too embarrassed to go and see doctors. I was getting, you know, bad hip, bad ankles, bad knees. Walking a mile down to the school to pick my boy up from school, walking back. It was hard, a mile round trip, and I used to find it too hard on my legs.
Really?
Yeah. So it was. It's kind of like, is this the end, or do you actually want to have a life? That was where I was with it, and.
So how did you start?
Right. So
had you ever done anything before?
Not since. Okay, so from school, maybe I had one go at being in the gym around the age of 30 when I split up from my first fiance, who you may or may not have met. She worked with Soldier, setting up the original office at Truman Brewery. The original ammunition office. Yeah, so her name's Alyssa Pemberton. And, you probably would have met her.
I know the name.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you get out of a long-term relationship, you want to start looking your best quick, don't you? Especially, you know, all of that. So, yeah, there was a time when I dropped a few stone, but then quickly put it back on. Moved to Manchester. And then sort of, things... Around in 2005, I moved. No, 2003, actually, I moved up. So I've been in 19 years.
Oh, my God, is it that long?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like a slow progression. Not progression. When you go down, when you slide down. It was a slow slide. Decline, yeah. Physically and mentally. Up until about 2017, and don't get me wrong, like I'm very functioning on it. You know, you have loads of deflectors when you have mental illness. You know, red herrings, and you know, not letting people really see how troubled you are at any time.
Yeah.
So you can like, you can put people off the scent, and I'm very good at that. Always have been. And yeah, mostly by staying moody and aloof, and you know, yeah, and that doesn't help with, you know, I'm not really naturally like that, you know, so yeah, with relationships, that's pretty rubbish. So yeah, you get, I got myself into a state and thought, about 2018, I thought, yeah, I've got to really sort this out. So yeah, I had a radio show on Unity Radio in Manchester, and my mate ZJ, he's my mate now, he was the producer of the show, a big lump of a guy, Shabazz his name is, and a black belt at kickboxing, K1. And I was impressed that he could do all of this at his size. He was still like about 18, 19 stone when I met him. And I was, yeah, about, I was about just over 20, 20 and a half stone when I met him. But he was, you know, proper fit with it. And I obviously couldn't do one sit-up, one push-up. I was fucked, basically. Yeah. So I know that he, or I knew he had aspirations to become a producer, or a better producer. He's a producer. Yeah. And I offered to give him double the amount of hours in the studio that he'd give me, helping me exercise, and in exchange.
Yeah.
So that's what we did, yeah. We basically, I drove to Oldham, and if it was raining, I'd be in his kind of living room, I suppose. He'd clear things, yeah, out, and he'd get the pads out, and I'd have boxing gloves, and he showed me how to kick the bag and punch the bag properly. That took about 2.5 stone off. Then he was taking, when the weather was better, took us up to the tennis courts, did circuit training, and yeah, got me to the stage where I could walk in a gym without feeling like, you know, the fattest, worst person ever,
yeah,
existing. You know, it took a lot for me to get in that gym. And then I got a PT. First one, Ben, he was great, pretty brutal. A Persian guy, like a champion Olympian bodybuilder, champion karate, taekwondo. Like he was an absolute drill master. That kind of worked for, that worked for about 6 months, and then I couldn't take it anymore. And then kind of got into a relationship, and then put all the weight back on over lockdown.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, I put it all back on, yeah. All of it back on. So, yeah, I had to sort it out again. So I've had a few false starts, but I think I'm back on it now, Amy. You know what I mean? I'm kind of, like, levelled out in me 34 jeans, where I was 44. Yeah.
Wow,
like,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'm happy. I'm like, you know, I'm not ever going to be Adonis. I'm getting into, you know, older gentleman territory now. Do you know what I mean? But it's, at the end of the day, I feel like mentally where I'm at now, I feel like a completely different bloke.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing the difference it does make without you realising.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Being comfortable in your own skin, like, is it? That's what it's meant for me. We probably wouldn't mean that for everybody. Right, so there's a load of 2x4, a load of massive beams and plasterboard just arriving outside there.
What are you getting done?
I'm just having a bit of a refurb in the studio. Getting in some. Getting.
Where is it? Storage.
No, we're on the. It's like the second floor. Like, it's three flights of stairs. He's got to carry all that up now. That was the look I was getting then. He's like, no, mate, I'll sort it. Don't worry. He's thinking, you timed this. You timed this podcast right, didn't you?
Yeah, so the studio's not at home?
No. This is a place that I've had. It's like a joint lease that I've got with two other friends who also have studios. And we share a recording room at the bottom, like a live room.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, permanent drum set up and, you know, all different mics and amps and stuff. It's quite nice, yeah. And we've got our own control rooms and everything, you know.
That's wicked.
Yeah. You'll have to come up.
I'm definitely going to come up. because my niece is went to Manchester Uni as well. My niece Anthony's still there. And I'm always saying, I'm going to come up. So I am going to come up, definitely. So music. So first thing I want to ask you, the name.
Yeah.
And I've probably asked you this a million times before, but my brain doesn't remember anything anymore. Where did the name come from?
Oh, I wish there was an exciting answer to this one. If I had a pound for every time I've told it, it felt like, yeah, cool story, bro. It's, yeah, basically, I used to have a tape deck, one of the few things that I actually owned when I started making music. You know, everything was in separates, wasn't it? You know, you'd have your separate amp and tape deck and all that.
Yes.
So my tape deck had, among other things, a bias switch that I couldn't really work out what it was doing. It used to twist it and didn't used to do much. You know what I mean? But I think it was.
What does it do? Because I know that, but what actually did it do?
I think it's some way of calibrating the tape, maybe the angle of the head or something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's
okay.
Something that you would twist, sort of align it and make it sound better in some way, according to what you're playing. But I never worked out quite what it did. But I thought, oh, yeah, that I was looking for a name, and this was quite a long time ago, probably 1994, when I first started making music on an Amiga. So that's how long ago, yeah. Commodore Amiga with half a meg RAM.
Oh, my God.
And that includes all the sounds and everything. And so the operating system... God. The operating system Optimed used to run off a floppy, and then all the sounds would load in off floppies.
Wow.
And it'd all be like, you know, 10 kilobyte, 20 kilobyte.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Wow. Pretty crazy when you think of it. People like my friend Steve Gurley, who I'll go into, like, if you want me to. That's a whole other conversation. How I got into it, and my mate Steve was already established making like jungle techno. This was about 93, 94. And he'd got, I think he got a Mac by then, but he was one of a few people, producers that I know, that put records out just using the audio capabilities of a Commodore Amiga computer. You know, they might link it up to a sampler and use that as well. But, you know, some of the bass lines that were running were coming off of these old... I mean, to put it into perspective, your average calculator that you'd get has got more memory than that. Do you know what I mean? It's crazy. Yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah. We're going back. So, I was basically the first setup that I had. This is going to sound crazy, but I swear to you, this is what I had. I borrowed my mate's Amiga. And I didn't have any, like, amp, but I had, like, a MIDI system with, it was, like, what do you call it, phono ins on the back. So it had an aux thing, so you could play through it. But I didn't have the speakers. The speakers are blown on it. I think it was a Samsui or something like that. It was some cheap MIDI system. So my mate had some cable, some speaker wire, and a couple of car speakers out of his Mini that he'd just replaced. So he gave me those, and I remember they were like bronze gilded kind of oblong speakers. Yeah, about, I don't know, about not very big at all, 6 inches, and I put them in two shoe boxes. I cut out the holes and sellotaped them into shoe boxes, and that's literally. What I was listening to, I was poor. I was a student. I'd literally just given up university. I dropped out of uni in Milton Keynes.
What were you doing?
Land management. Because I used to work in Germany on a building site with my dad. And and he used to bang on about architects and chartered surveyors being loaded.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that one's car there, you know. God. You know, and I used to think, oh, okay, but if I have to do something, maybe it's something I understand. And at that time, music wasn't a thing for me.
Yeah.
I loved it, but I never imagined that I could ever get into making it or anything.
So what made you think that maybe you could?
Okay, so one evening in Fuller's Slade, this grotty little estate in Milton Keynes, right, there's a working man's club there, yeah? And me and a couple of my mates, we were kind of into, like, crate digging for samples and, like, soundtracky sort of dusty old records and rare groove and reggae and soul and hip-hop, that sort of thing. And it was all kind of eclectic, and we all had our little niche and whatnot. I had a few, like, rare groove things and, like, old disco and whatnot. So we went down there. We managed to persuade the owners to let us on the decks at this working man's club. So we went in there. And as we're coming out of it, a little bit inebriated, let's say we got paid in beers, there's this guy starting on the doorman. Just one doorman, tall, smart, well-dressed, in his 30s. And me being me, I'm like, to the guy who's causing trouble, I'm like, just fuck, jog on, mate. Go on, fuck off. Trying to, like, get involved, because I've had a drink. And he's like, and the doorman's like tapping me on the shoulder. He's like, nah, you're all right, mate. I mean, he's like a foot taller than me and probably a black belt in karate or whatever, Thai boxing or something. So, but he's like, but I like your spirit, though. Do you fancy a job on Saturday? Come and work for me over at the Sanctuary. So I got onto the Sanctuary security team just through being drunk outside a club, telling someone drunker than me to jog on. The Sanctuary, for those of you who don't know, was the birthplace of most kinds of rave. Or if it wasn't the birthplace, it was the teething place. You know, it was where things actually, like, became proper. So even, like, happy hardcore, jungle, house, all of these big genres, they kind of, that was the where the DJs, all the best DJs used to come outside of London. It was the biggest venue outside of London. It was at full capacity, about 8,000 capacity, spread over two venues with a fun fair in the middle. So
what?
With a fun fair in the middle.
A fun fair in the middle?
Yeah. They'd have, you know, like, you know, stalls, sticky toffee apple and, like, you know, everything.
Serious?
And, like, fucking a big wheel and, like, you know, bump dodgems and all that. Yeah, it was great.
Fucking hell.
So Dreamscape, Helter Skelter, Slamming Vinyl, Jungle Fever, Evolution, and later Sidewinder, which I was a part of. I set up Sidewinder with Lambert. But they all went there and it thrived. And from there, like, you know, it became very well known. Obviously, there was parties as big in London. But outside London, it was like one of the big ones, really. It was only a few places that did it on that scale. So, yeah, I was one of about 30 doormen at that place, and every week I'd carry record boxes of DJ Hype, Shy FX, Groove Rider, Danny Ramplin, Dougal, DJ Dougal, you know, like all these legends that who I totally know now in real life. Do you know what I mean? Like back then I was a fat ginger MA1 wearing Aggie little doorman. But I didn't know what a baseline was until I'd worked there. Because, you know, there was one time, and I do tell this story quite a bit, but I'll tell it again. I'm sure Andre don't mind me telling it. But Shy FX, didn't know who he was from Adam. Just a, you know, quiet guy with record box. So part of my job was to carry it to the stage and make sure they get to the stage all right. So, so I'm walking through the crowd, full house. I can't remember who was on, but he was just about to come on. And he's got his record bag and a dub plate bag. And he pulls out a dub plate and he's like, you got to check this one out, yeah? And he looked dead chuffed for himself. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And so he puts on this record, and it was like a delayed reaction, but it was like someone instantly dialed up the heat, and the place went absolutely berserk. And it was Bambaataa. Like, I don't know if it was the first time he played it or one of the first times, or I don't know, but definitely the first time I'd heard it. And that, yeah. I mean, that tune kind of, at the time, changed the face of drum and bass, jungle, as it was known back then. And, yeah, I felt like a proper, like, bolt of lightning at that point. I was like, yeah, this is the bollocks. Like, this, to be experienced something. Because I knew what a dub plate was. Friends of mine, like, I lived at a record shop just before that. Friends of mine made music. So this was all, this was it. Like, I didn't realise that's what it was all about. That was the end of the whole process, you know, the making the tune, the getting it on a DAT tape, the taking it to London, the getting it mastered, and getting it to a DJ. And then the DJ comes to Milton Keynes and plays the thing. And that's what happens. And I'm like, okay. So at that point, I was taking it very seriously. And I think around 95, 96, my dad arranged for me to stay out in Germany with him for a couple of years on the hod, you know, looking after free brickies. And I earned enough to bring an Akai sampler back home. And then I learned the trade. And that was me in. Like, no one invited me. No one invited me. I was the pain in the ass guy that was always coming round, always with weed or hash. I'd never come round empty-handed, but I'd probably have a cassette and force you to listen to my early sketches, which were absolutely shit. I suppose I had all the enthusiasm, and that's sort of what you need, isn't it? To get on two buses to go round your mate's house to play him what you've been doing, even though you know it's shit.
What did you start making?
Jungle. Jazzy jungle. Try to use the samples that I'd kind of been collecting on vinyl.
Yeah.
But it took a while for me to get my feet really and get my head around the sampler. And that coincided with me knowing a guy called Richie Long, who owned the local record shop in Wolverton, which is where you came that time to my house and my studio. That's so about 200 metres from there in the square. I used to live above the record shop. And so I already knew him. He had an in with DMC, you know, like the legendary company DMC down in Slough.
Yeah.
And got us a record deal with a label called Stress, which was Chris and James what's his name? It will come back to me. Dave Seaman. Yeah. All the prog house guys down there.
Yeah.
So, you know, we went down there a couple of times, recorded some stuff and got a little, you know, our first record deal. He didn't know anybody else who could push the buttons, so I was the first choice, and I learned on job. I just about got just enough nous to pull it off, and kind of literally just by the seat of my pants between 96 and about 2003, learned the trade on the job. Like, and at all points, I am fucking sweaty. It's like a duck under the water with the legs, you know, kind of trying to appear calm and like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing, you know, but it's like fake. Yeah. It was literally a fake it until you make it job, when I think about it. But I picked things up pretty quick. So I knew what I have to learn. I'd ask the right questions to the people, my peers at the time. You know, there was quite a few of them actually. Spat from Criminal Minds, another guy I've got to give a shout out to. We've not always got on, but he helped me grow exponentially at the time.
just through taking me seriously and lending me the odd bit of equipment and the odd bit of knowledge at the time. So I've got to give him up his dues there. Steve Gurley is another one. Craig Hammond, I engineered at his studio back in the day in the mid-90s. Picked up quite a bit there. The late 90s, I went to work with DJ Breeze and Mark Lambert in Northampton. I basically used to get a train there and back and then walk the rest of the way down to their studio to engineer Happy Hardcore and Jungle. But out of that came Sidewinder. And Sidewinder became what it is now through Lambert's hard work and Principal and Juice Man and all these lifelong buddies that I've got. So, you know, sometimes it's weird, isn't it? You go in a certain direction, you end up like drifting over here somewhere, not where you're intending to be. But then out of that, something completely fresh comes along. Like, and only if you had drifted over here would you have got that opportunity, because you would have never have met these people otherwise. So this is, it's always been my kind of way. Rather than having like strict plans, I kind of have always let, I suppose, I don't want to say the universe, but whatever.
Why?
Because like, I don't know, like, the universe is a bit vague, isn't it? But yeah, all right, for the purposes of this, making this point, the universe, kind of take me where I'm going to go and sort of, you know, I suppose it's decisions, isn't it? We all get decisions every day. We can turn left or we can turn right.
Yeah.
We can do something or not do something. So yeah, that's, I've always been a kind of less about making plans and sticking to them, but kind of thinking on my feet, and I'm an opportunist, you know.
Yeah.
And that's really where I am in this.
But I think that really helps, because sometimes you can have the best laid plans, can't you? But they don't always turn out like that. But if you can just appreciate where you are at the time and make the best of that situation, sometimes it turns out better than it would have done anyway, isn't it? But I just think it's good to have an open mind.
I think as I mean, you're probably the same, Amy, in that as you've got older, or as I've got older, I'm less likely to go in both feet into anything anymore. You know, like I used to be fearless and just like would jump into situations without any fear, because in my head, where I've come from and how I've come up, I've got nothing to lose anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really. It was all about just having a go. I'm a proper have a go, Charlie. You know. And if I'm good at it, good. If I'm not, I'll try again.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I've got, I mean, this is where the mental health thing comes in as well, because as that declined, I was less likely to want to get in situations that took any effort or anything like that. You know, there was a lot of, I was kind of resting on my laurels there for a bit. Not necessarily making music, but just like working smart. And yeah, there's quite a lot I would do differently if I could over the last 10 years. I feel I could have, you know, done things a little bit differently. But I mean, there's no point moving with regrets. That's another thing I've learned.
So whatever's happened has brought you to where you are now. And you can't, there's no point thinking, oh, what if? Because you can't change it, can you? So.
Well, this is it, yeah. You know, having like bad interactions with people on the job over years because of your own behavior and your own peace, you know, your own state of mind. So that's something I don't miss now. Do you know what I mean? Having clean and clear interactions with people, and I feel like in that way, you know. It's not having regrets in as such. I suppose it's just like looking how I used to be and making sure I'm not like that anymore. And that's good enough.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me. And do you know what?
Yeah.
It seems to be working, because the wheels are still on the vehicle and I'm still driving it after all this time.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's been a long time.
It bloody has, you know.
I mean,
Neighbourhood, I made it 24 years ago.
Was it 24 years ago?
Yeah, in my bedroom.
Was that the first garage track you made?
It was one of them. It, probably about the sixth or seventh.
Did you kind of fall into garage naturally, or did you?
Well, I was over at Breezy and Lambert's studio, Essential Vinyl. It was like a record shop and basement studio. So I was over in Northampton every day, hearing all the garage, because Principal used to come in. At that time, I don't know if he worked there or if he was just part of the furniture, but he was there every day. And after hours, you know, I was allowed to use the studio as much as I want. That was part of the deal. They didn't pay me, but I could use the studio and stay over there. So I just used to crash on the floor in the studio or go crash at Mikey's Principal's. And Juice would be there. And, you know, we were into jungle. Like, Juice Man was one of the best jungle MCs, Principal, wicked jungle DJ. But also, this thing coming through, like, this two-step sound that was coming through was blowing our minds. Groove Chronicles, Noodles and LB, they were creating magic. Them two, a lot of things are locked on at the time, were turning my head. Not so much the kind of, there was a real London-centric sound kind of at the time, and it was a lot to do with like 4/4. It was like an overhang from Speed Garage and stuff. It was like really fast 4/4 garage, and I weren't really into that. Not because I didn't like it. It was because that wasn't where I was coming from. I was coming from a more of a breaks thing. So the turning point for me was when I got asked to do a remix of a thing. I mentioned him, Spats from Criminal Minds. He was in a group called ES Dubs. So I remixed a track called Standard Hoodlum Issue. People know it like a snake. They know it as like a snake. And it became like a bit of a mini anthem. But out of one conversation with Steve Gurley telling me about triplet timing on Cubase and how to get a swing using a triplet grid, which is like, instead of there being four lines, there'd be six lines where I could put something. This was a real strict art of how where to put hi-hats and snares and how to syncopate. And it was like drum 101. And I got that lesson one day off of Steve, just me looking over his shoulder, because he was working for Social Circles for Jason K, engineering some stuff and putting out releases. So he was already there. He had Spirit of the Sun. Spirit of the Sun was Lenny Fontana on Public Demand. Shouts to Jimmy. Fucking like absolutely.
I've got one on
here. Yeah, he'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant. I mean, that whole time, Public Demand was running it. Steve was on that label. He showed me behind the curtain, basically. He showed me how to do it. But where I'm aiming for Steve Gurley, and I've got like a real nuts and bolts rag set up, and he's got like a proper nice one and years of experience using it.
Yeah.
I'm aiming for that and I'm getting something completely different. But that was where the Zed Bias sound come from. It was like somehow I managed to put it all together in a way that sounded like it was mixed down. But I didn't know what mixed down was, really. I mean, I was coming out of just two outputs on my sampler. So everything was sort of mixed inside the sampler, which it shouldn't be possible. So I've somehow fluked it. I did get a really good bass, 808 bass sound off of Steve, an Akai, my first Akai sound. And it was he was gifted it from Rob Haig of Omni Trio on Moving Shadow Recordings in early 90s, like 91, 92, something like that. So I was using hand-me-down amazing sounds off of established producers, which was allowing me to get this thing. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there wasn't any sort of cool expertise or anything. It was purely just for the will and the want of being in it and just having a go.
Yeah.
I'm telling you the story now. I'm fucking amazed that any of it popped off.
What was it like when it... How quickly after making it did it become a hit?
Right, so the story with Neighbourhood was Glenn Woods, local DJ to Milton Keynes, garage kind of pioneering in Milton Keynes. He owned the record shop I used to live above. So
yeah.
Treehouse turned into, I think it was Fat Tracks or something. So it was Glenn's thing. And he came to me saying, I really need a dub plate. I play before all the guests come up to the local club, which was, I think it was called Casino at the time. It was the Winter Gardens in Milton Keynes. So a good 1,000 to 1,500 capacity, big old club. And it was a regular with all of, you might, Rough Cut Lloyds, Norris Windross, Jason Kay, Dream Team. All of these people would all come up one at a time and guest each.
Yeah.
I think it was even a weekly. It might have been a weekly or a fortnightly. It was regular. So he said, I need something that I can play before they come on that absolutely knocks their socks off. So that saying they can't play after, you know, play a tune after.
Because
it was totally like that kind of clash mentality back then. It was, you know, that it was so competitive with the DJs, especially like local to London DJs, because locals weren't getting booked in London, so they had to get noticed.
Yeah.
So getting a dub plate was, that's what, that was taking care of that. So he gave me £40 and said, can you, you know, can you do me a dub plate basically? And because he was, I think he was going out at the time with my missus's sister, younger sister. I was like, yeah, I'll do it for you. So basically, I sat there on my own and made Neighbourhood in about an hour and a half. And then I got Rumpus, who was up the next day, I think, recording with Nicky Prince, who's on Neighbourhood, on a track called Strong Enough to Survive, which came out on Sidewinder. And he's got Rumpus's vocal on it. So I got him to do a quick dub plate for Glenn Woods, and he used to say, I feel good, 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 etc. Listen to my man Glenn Woods in my neighbourhood. That was the lyric, yeah. And I've still got the version here, and that's the one that really tears as well, yeah, because there was absolutely no finesse in the bass, and it's just way too loud and it tears. So he got a dub plate cut at Music House, cut by Wookie's brother Leon, rest in peace. Brought it back up to Milton Keynes, and Glenn's told me, like, I mean, at least a couple of times the DJ that come on after him wouldn't leave the place without it, even though it's got his name on it. They had to have it because the excuse me, the drop was so big. It was a dramatic big, like, jungle drop, you know. The bass was it was full on. So he'd have to go back down to London and get another one cut. And then obviously there's other DJs down there that kind of caught on to it. And I think he might have cut a few for them. So then the pirate DJs are getting onto it.
Yeah.
And it kind of just picked up a life of its own until Locked On boss Andy Lewis called me one day, asked me for a remix and asked me about this tune. So I made a proper version of it. I mean, Glenn was never in the room when it was written, but because Glenn was the catalyst for it, I always cut him in. I cut him in like on a quarter of the publishing, so he's always he's always been taken care of in that respect.
Yeah.
And the bald guy behind the decks in the video, that's Glenn. I didn't want to be in the video at the time. I thought it was bait.
Video though, aren't you?
Just my eye and my finger.
Aren't you holding a dog, or is that the album cover?
Nah, it's someone else, some other handsome brute. I don't know. I wasn't in it. I was so intent on not being you know, recognised and all of that. I just didn't want any of that. So yeah. Glenn's version. That was how Neighbourhood was born. Really, that happened. Redid it, revocaled it. I mean, no, we didn't even revocal it. I just repeated the word man. So listen to the man in my neighbourhood. And then the rest is histoire.
What? Where did it get in the charts?
25, something like that.
I remember it being on
telly. I was gutted because Sid Owen from EastEnders beat us by 1 point.
Oh, did he?
He was one place above. with his it was some fucking cod reggae sort of cover, wasn't it? Yeah. funny.
So when did you start DJing then? After
very soon after that. So very soon after that. So
after Neighbourhood.
It was Winter Music Conference in Miami in 2000.
Yeah.
And that was when I literally had meetings. I went out there with Andy Lewis. I had my meeting with Nick from XL. And Nick basically told us that he wanted to put it out and it's going to be a single and it's looking great and the whole thing is going to go to number one and all of that. So we had a great time. I mean, that... Okay, so... So let me set the scene. I'm in Miami, yeah? First time I've been to America. No, but it would be the first time I've ever been to America. And I'm out there at the Marlin Hotel for my first show. And I've got a bag of dub plates of really like... some. When I think... I've looked back at these dub plates and a lot of the tunes, they never did anything. Because I used to make tunes every day. And a lot of these things, I think, I just throw them onto a DAT. Hope for the best that the mastering engineers will make them sound great. And quite often they didn't. And when you play off dub plate on vinyl or whatever, and you don't know how to DJ, it can sound fucking awful. Nothing's rescuing you, you know. Sounds like you're throwing pots and pans down the stairs. Which is basically what it sounded like. So, and luckily, it wasn't a full club. It was like, it was really weird. It was like a DJ set up on a terrace with like harem style, you know, cushions and beanbags and all of that. And you'd have like a listening party at best, two or three, four people. And there was just a couple of rappers and like a guy called Nigel from Arakabessa Records. Who he was my link to UB40 a little bit further down the line. He worked with them, ran their label.
Yeah.
So I remixed the track for them. That's another story. But anyway, I'm out there. MJ Cole, I'd just got to kind of know him. Giles Peterson as well, got to know him out there. Jazzanova. The Talking Loud party was the party, basically, of that time. And Elizabeth Troy. I was out there with Martin Aikin. So Martin was the engineer down at in Reading, Basement Studios, which is where I took Sidewinder down to be distributed. So I'd met Arthur and Lance and Martin all at the same time. And I made a few records down in their studio, which is a banging studio. And the only person who could get the most out of it was Martin. So now, you know, Martin Aikin's like, he's like an iconic bloody house IB for American tours and all of that. He's a house DJ. But I know him as like one of the best soulful, like jazzy keyboard Rhodes players. And, you know, absolutely amazing on the Moog. And, and a, you know, a really great producer, but making really rugged stuff. So it's mad people's journeys, isn't it? My biggest memory from that trip though was 5 a.m. after I think me and Andy we'd just been to see somebody else play. Oh yeah, it was Todd Edwards, yeah. And we all had dinner at 5 a.m. on the beach, on the South Beach, like an Italian restaurant that had like this I don't know, outside bit that looked out onto the sea. And we had chicken parmesan at about 5:30 in the morning, drunk out of our minds, all of us like dribbling, like just remember like loads of tomato sauce on chins and like loads of just chatting shit basically. But I'd not seen Todd until I saw you the other day at 51st.
No way.
Yeah, so I think that's 22 years.
Yeah.
From when we first met, yeah.
Wow.
Bloody hell, we're getting old, aren't we?
I know, I'm dying.
He's another one, like, yeah, he's had such a great run, but also, like, yeah. I'm glad that he's got his roses and his paychecks as well, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, for someone, because yeah. It doesn't always happen for the people that do the same sort of thing as he did, you know, the pioneers, he did get that Daft Punk paycheck, and he's still touring the world, and I love that.
Yeah.
Poetic justice. Am I chatting? Sorry. Yeah. I'm not letting you get a word in edgeways here, am I?
No, but it's not about this is the point. You're supposed to talk. So what happened after Miami?
Right, so Miami went home, made a pop record, which kind of the knee jerk response from the underground was this radio edit's shit. You can't play it in a club. Because I didn't really know about mixdowns, so I'm making a radio edit of Neighbourhood.
Right, yeah.
For XL. It was nothing like the vinyl that came out that sold 12,000 in 2 weeks on Nocturne. Which sounded heavy and like was in everybody's box. Sold out, you know, pretty much within weeks. So that really kind of made me think, fuck, I'm not in it to be a pop star. I've only put out like 2 or 3 records. I'm all about the underground, mate. And so I was getting offers to work with people like Khalees and like Tracy Thorne from Everything But The Girl. And like various vocalists at the time that were kind of doing bits but weren't really known at majors. I was getting all the remix work. I was getting like... I'd have, like, at any point, I'd have between five and ten on the go at the same time.
Jesus Christ.
I was loving it. But, you know, obviously you can't, when you take all that work in, and I'm an opportunist, brought up on a council estate, it could all stop at any minute in my brain.
Yeah.
So I'm grabbing it with both hands.
Yeah.
Grabbing it with both hands, and I'm doing it morning, noon and night. So this is where the mental illness started, really. Soon as the work started flowing in, the thought of it all collapsing and the pressure, the undue pressure that I'd put on myself to get it all done, and the excuses I'd make to all the people around me that would have to put up with me in this mode.
Yeah.
And all the implications of that. So, it started and I never really got all of that sorted. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of that kind of got worse and worse. As the music got better, as the music started to succeed, as I was getting a better career, like things got incrementally worse. But it was interesting, quite, you know, musically, the results, because in this tailspin of panic and anxiety, I've then decided, right, I want to learn every genre of music going. Like, I became an absolute monk to it. You know, like, just all the subgenres of dance music and everything that we'd call, like, a cousin of UK garage. So, like, you know, grime, dubstep, even, like, you know, forerunners of that, drum and bass, jungle, house, techno, and then all this post-dubstep stuff, you know, like, that came out of that, reinventing house music for Londoners. With MCs on. And, you know, it kind of, the panic threw me into this state where I kind of had to spread my bets because I had to have 10 names. Because if I didn't have 10 names, I couldn't put out 10 records at once. And if I didn't put out 10 records at once, I wouldn't be doing enough because, you know, it's like this pure workaholic, mad pressure and all of this. And I just built up I built up like about like a house of cards, because obviously it all comes down eventually. But
yeah,
you know, I've had like over 500 songs released under different names and stuff like that over the years. Not all been great, but there's a lot of like points where you can tell my mental health at the time was pushed to the very edge.
Yeah.
And there was no one sat next to me to say, yeah, I'll calm down. And I've like the music's gone super like avant-garde, or it's gone in directions that I wouldn't have known. But then later on down the line, people have like come back to me on these bits of music and said, these are like some of the best things you've ever done. You know, like that, and people that aren't like garage fans and aren't drum and bass fans and don't know me of old have gotten to these through other avenues of music. So, like you say, whatever brings you to this point is a blessing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I feel at the moment. I'm really philosophical about it all. I'm not emotional about any of my catalogue. There's nothing I'm ashamed of. There's nothing I'm over the, you know, that I'm, it's not like I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my best records are absolute bollocks. You know, it's just like, it's all part of the same thing. My life.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're little snapshots, and some of them are really good. Like photos, in a way. You can have good photos that come out well, blurry, or, you know, some things in the wrong place, composed well.
Yeah.
It's that's quite a good one. I remember that.
That is a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you got recorded.
Yeah. Well, just remember where you heard it first.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of, I mean, you know, putting out my records, that's how I see my catalogue, is like a photo album of a lot of different calibre stuff. So there's some absolutely awful dog shit stuff in there, but there's some ones that I would stand by being like, you know, I'd be happy with people remembering me by that.
Yeah.
When I'm not here anymore. So, that, you know, in that way, I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. Don't feel I like
it's
I...
It's good to just... put everything out. It's everything you've made. It all comes from somewhere, doesn't it? And things that you might not think are that great might be someone's favourite thing.
This is very true.
It's all, what's the word? It's objective. Is that the word?
Yeah, yeah, this is true.
Art is, isn't it? Like, I know that songs that I've made, and I just think, oh my God, it's fucking terrible. But a lady that I work for, a couple of my ones that I hate the most are her favourites. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird how... that, you know, and it is, it's a journey, isn't it? And like you said, it's kind of like it is your story, essentially.
Yeah. Once I kind of took the pressure off of it all having to be good and complete and whole now for me to feel okay about it, like as in like my repertoire, my career, it's all got to be everything that it can be right now. At all times, it's like spinning plates, and like I've realized in my 40s really that spreading myself thin like that, I mean, it sounds so obvious when you say it, but it was preventing me expediting any one part with any thoroughness, with any class, you know. I was missing out, like the potential was being missed because I was basically cowboying certain elements of certain things. So spending time concentrating, like an amount of time, a finite amount of time concentrating on one thing or a couple of things instead of like 20 things, that's been serving me really well. And the again, it's been through anxiety that's driven me to the state where I feel I have to do 20 things at the same time and carry the hopes and dreams of like dozens and dozens and dozens of artists on my shoulders, because that, you know, that was stopping me sleeping and like turning me to drink and stuff like that, you know.
Not the
people I'm talking about. I'm not about the expectations I put on myself, and the pressure I put on myself and the role I'd taken as being Zed Bias and not being, you know, forgetting about Dave, essentially. Dave's like fucking way back in the room. Do you know what I mean? Once I took it back to, you know, dialed it back, and it's all about time and energy, really. I find that I'm doing things a lot more thoroughly now and getting a lot more results off of daily things, not just music, you know, like exercise as well, and, you know, weight loss, just life goals, you know what I mean? Try not to want everything to be perfect right now. And if it's not, then just, oh, shit, well, I don't care about anything then. Do you know what I mean? Like, I suppose what I'm talking about is normal to 90% of the people listening to this. You've got to realise what a fucking state I was in all these years. Do you know what I mean?
But how long did that go on for? I mean, has that been kind of the majority of time
the anxiety thing, like handling it to various degrees, like better or worse at whatever's going on. It depends on workload, really, and the kind of relationships I've had at the time with people. That has a lot to do with it, because there's a major factor about me and my career is it's been collaborative a lot more than it hasn't. So the process of making music's been collaborative. I've brought people in. I've asked people to be part of stuff. I've initiated so many collaborative projects, and being sort of the person who's taken the responsibility of getting them all finished, been like, you know, so that in a way has been how I've formed so many, like, dozens of lifelong friendships and bonds, and, you know, it's been like entwined with my life. There's not been really much separation. So a lot of my friends of old and of new have come through either directly through making music with them, like they'll be the person collaborating with, or it'll be someone I've met on the path through that, through knowing these people. So, and you know, that's as it should be. You know, we make friends.
Yeah.
You know, you don't go out and choose what kind of friend you have. You kind of just become friends, do you? So,
And it's lovely that you have had so many nice experiences.
I am blessed with friends. I really am. I've not always, you know, been compass mentis enough to appreciate it at the time. I feel like a lot of relationships that I kind of let down over the years, I've gone back and I've tried to make reparations there. Yeah. But that was part of me becoming better.
What's next for you? Answer about age is depressing.
Age is nothing but a number.
That's very true.
Yeah. So I've had, you know what you were saying about it's good to release everything? And I kind of, inside, my stomach turned, because, like, I've had so much deliberation and kind of turmoil over this over the years, releasing and letting go. And it's got progressively worse over the years, because you feel, I suppose, a lot of older, you know, kind of 10 years in the game plus artists and producers would relate to this, but you kind of, I don't know, you've got to put your best foot forward, haven't you, at all times.
Yeah.
Every few years I've had to, like, reinvent a little bit and just to stay abreast of things. And it's my endless curiosity with genres. I absolutely love a genre. I love a subgenre. I love mixing a few genres together. It's sort of what keeps the interest there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've been having a few experiments recently, and I've been loving the house vibes. Like, I've been really getting it. And after a recent trip to Ibiza, I can confirm I love a bit of house music. It's a bit of me. It's a bit of me.
Right. No, this is good, because I have a bit of a funny relationship with house, but I know that I'll like what you make, so I appreciate that.
Well, it's kind of, it's very much in my nature to kind of put a bit of garage-ish, like a little teeny tinge in there somewhere, in the sonics, probably in the bottom end, a little bit. So that's been quite good. I've been revisiting old songs and new songs and kind of reimagining them in a house way.
Yep.
That's been really nice. And I've been working with a few different people, getting a garage project together. There's a lot of, it's been all hands on board. Like, to get this, I think there's 14 tracks and 26 collaborators.
Wow.
Yeah. People like Inja, Mighty Mo from Heartless Crew, Children of Zeus. From Manny, Chunky, Prima, Slay, who's doing very well at the moment. Loads. Oslam from Germany. I recorded a song with Oslam, which is on this project. I found it on a lost DAT tape from 2000, recorded in UB40 studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, another garage story. I've got all the garage stories. Tune in next week for another garage story. we've got garage and we've got house. But funny enough, the only releases I've had this year, and I've had in the last 12 months, maybe two or three, drum and bass, you know, like faster things.
Yeah.
Which I really love as well. I've got a real love for that kind of 160 to 174 BPM range. I feel like it's great for dancing. It's sonically some of the best produced stuff in existence. Like some of these producers, Dub Physics, who's got a studio here with me, he's an absolute G. Skeptical, I've got a garage track on this project that I've produced with Skeptical. So I've got one of my D&B heroes, current heroes, on a garage thing with me. And it's your way it is. I'm going to send it to you.
Send it to me.
I'm going
to
send it to you. I've got a SoundCloud link that I'm going to send it. I know you'll give me the realness.
I will, don't worry. Do you think that that's what's kept you going, being so diverse? Because I think you have to keep changing what you do and adapting. But it's got to be a genuine, you are genuinely, you love it, don't you? You love it all, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think that that does help to kind of keep you relevant and keep you.
I think it's three, it's three things, main things. Like, you could divide it into three things. It's like stubbornness, with tenacity, but stubbornness. Yeah. I won't stop. So, ideas, I'm always getting ideas. When they stop, it's like, what else have you got as a producer or an artist? Like, you've got to have ideas, things to develop and work on. I couldn't just sit here with equipment every day, switch it on and go through the motions of just like, go through some snare drums and I'll create some samples today. No, when I'm in the driver's seat, I'm strapped in and I'm driving fast. I wanna get a banger. This is it. I'm still a contender. Do you know what I mean? I'm 48, and I've never felt more like a contender in my life. I was ill for quite a bit. I don't know. I've not really told you, but I had some stomach problems. I had pancreatitis and infected gallbladder in February. I had it all out. So I had that for a couple of years, just like some life things that kind of put me off my stride a little bit. And obviously lockdown, that wasn't the best. But since all that's cleared up, I am bouncing around like a young man now.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, so it could have come at a better time. All the ideas, all like my new blueprint that I'm trying out, a couple of blueprints I'm trying out, coinciding with getting some really nice bookings. My agent, Lauren, at Earth, if any of you know Lauren, I'm sure a lot of people do already know Lauren. She's an absolute belting agent, but she's also become a good mate over the time. Aww. You know, it's only like a few, 4 years maybe we've been working together. But we've got each other's backs. And, agents that rave together in Ibiza stay together, you know?
Yeah.
less said about that, the better. But we went on a field trip. I was like, I've got to hear some of this house music up front, big. So we went out, we had a couple of excursions, one to Pikes and one.
Oh, I love Pikes.
Oh, Harvey playing at Pikes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing in Freddie's bedroom.
I know what I want to do. Yeah, I want to be on the podcast. That is my dream, is to go when he's there.
He's like iconic now. He's another. I put him in the same bracket as Harvey now. Like he's done so much for that that side of the scene.
Yeah.
And to see like his personality come out over the years, because when I met him, he was a Cockney van driver from Essential Vinyl with Sarah working with Sarah. So like you know we've all had a journey. We are who we are now. That's the nature of life, isn't it? You grow, you change and all that. But it's great to see, like, people completely come out of their shell and don it up. Like, he's a don, isn't
he? Yeah, he's a don.
Yeah, so...
As are you.
We're all out here just doing it the same. You know, I would never, ever think of myself like that. Come on. Dave's over here right now. Dave's in, not Zed.
Zed, where did the Zed come from?
Oh, I went through the alphabet for a prefix. Yeah, like literally A bias, B bias, C bias. You get where I'm going with this.
Seriously?
I ran out of letters, yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I love that.
It's a cool story, bro.
So
I should have just made up something about genetics by now, or just some super strain. It would have been way cooler.
The best.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. It's been really, really lovely. And I'm definitely going to come and see you.
Please do. Honestly, I don't usually swear this much on these sorts of things. And if I've offended any of the listeners by swearing too much, I'm sorry. I've got like a mini case of Tourette's from when I was a chef years ago. I've never quite lost it.
Did you used to be a chef?
I was a chef. Look, this is when you come up, Amy, right? I'm cooking for you, right? There's a little kitchen in this studio, right? When you come to the studio, I can knock up a banging scran. But honestly, I was a chef. But yeah, you make sure, like, you know, you got gym a few days after, because you're going to need to burn this one off proper.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, please do. I'm going to send you some music. Sorry if I've not really been like asking you much. I don't know how this works really. I've just
It's not. It's just me asking you.
All right. Well, that's job done.
So yes, that was the amazing Zed. That's so funny how we got his name as well. I mean he probably has told me before, but I'd completely forgotten. But I love that we just went through the alphabet. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. Big up. I loved that. And it's lovely when you see someone who does change their life for the better, and it was all off his own back. And yeah, he's done amazing. So I hope you find that as inspiring as I did. And what a legend. And I love the stories. I love all the stories. But yeah, thank you. Thanks for listening. If this is your first time listening, then thank you. Check out my other episodes. I've spoken to loads of other amazing people. And I've just been recording today, actually. With the amazing Joanna Fortune, who's a child psychologist, who I love. I think this is my fifth podcast with her, maybe. But we were saying about how everyone's got a book in them. Everyone's got a story. And that's why I love doing this podcast, because everyone has a story in them. So if you have a story in you and you would like to share it with me, then get in touch. Or if you have anyone that you think would be good, tell me and I'll annoy them till they come on. But yeah, thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please share the podcast. Big up. Stay safe and sane. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello
Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.